Welcome to the podcast!
Come be part of the conversations that happen around my kitchen table.
He's John Brannion, and he's been a stand-up comic for more than 30 years.
She's Amanda McKinney, and she's been my daughter for her whole life.
Our family believes laughter is a gift from God. We often discover it while discussing culture, faith, and family.
So go ahead and pull up a chair, neighbor. Can I call you Carl? There's plenty of room here for you.
Look, I got places to be.
No kidding.
I don't have time to wait for you guys to put your headphones on.
Or even tell us that we're starting the podcast.
I might have intentionally looked like nonchalant on purpose because I was hoping to get the whole thing going before.
I saw the red light. I'm like, she's already started.
If I hadn't said a word.
Welcome, Carl. This is Luke McKinney, a.k.a. a.k.a. the podcast favorite. We've got Peaches and John Brannion.
Several people reached out and thought and told him that they enjoyed the last episode, so now he's going to be insufferable.
Now he's going to talk all the time.
You know who else?
He's going to choke on his pizza. I'm jumping on pizza. So unused to talking, he doesn't know how to do it while doing other things.
I don't know how to multitask. Yeah. I also enjoyed our last episode, to be fair.
Good.
He can't do it safely.
What I was going to say is if I hadn't accidentally hit the wrong button on my first attempt to start the podcast, I would have successfully gotten it going.
Half done by now.
He was in the kitchen when I started and I was just like, oh, no, no.
This podcast would be half over and Luke and I wouldn't even be here yet.
Dad was taking out his hearing aids. I was just casually looking around and yeah, then I accidentally pushed the wrong button.
It's been a painful bracket for us. For March Madness, Carl, we have a tradition of
losing money.
Well, yeah, it's $5 to get in, and then it started back when the Peaches and Tabby and whatever the other kids' names are, Tim and
our brothers
Andrew,
of lesser importance
were little, and we were. I would bring home a bracket from where I worked, and each of the children would take a division, a region, and fill out the bracket for that region. And one year, won it. Yeah, we won it because each of the kids miraculously picked the correct Final Four. We had all four of the Final Four teams. And so we won. And
we're not going to win this
year. We haven't done that since. So.
Yeah.
Then you blew it all and had to go back to work.
Yep. Yep. I thought I was going to retire. I crunched some numbers and I found out that $50 was not enough to retire. So
who knew?
So yeah, went back to work. But we also played some golf and Peaches is coming along in golf.
Her back nine was way better than her front nine.
Occasionally hand the controller to her six-year-old son, and he would do as well as she did.
Yeah, but he doesn't
putt. That's changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he drives, so.
Yeah, putting is a different thing.
Together, the two of us are a almost mediocre golfer.
Mm-hmm.
With his driving and my chipping.
And there's also, just to bring you up to speed, there's a play that's going to be taking place here in the next couple of weeks, I guess.
Yeah, I'm told that opening day is in 2 weeks.
That's what all the signs say that are plastered all over our house.
All over the playbills are all over the house.
Well, they just settled on the date. They've been advertising the show, but they hadn't actually published an official show date until, like, I think yesterday is when she said... It's going to be April 7, I think, Sunday the 7th. Is that right?
I don't know.
Yeah. And I said, all right, well, if you make it official, though, you got to stick with it because I know that my director of music is a pretty perfectionistic artist, and I don't want her to get bogged down with the fact that it still won't be perfect when April 7 rolls around. But we'll see.
Yep. But they're doing all the costuming. The script. They've choreographed it.
Yeah,
April 7th. I think there's special effects, too, unless I'm...
Well, I haven't seen it, so I'm just going off of what I've heard from the various thespians. Like the other day, a bunch of the cousins were sick, and Emery was like, oh, that is not good because Marcy is Jane and Simon is Toodles. Yep. So, of course, I texted Tabby and I was like, I have some terrible news. Your children are going to be sorely missed because of their very vital roles in this musical.
Right. They're principal players.
Yeah. And then Megan, who's also in that same thread, she chimed in. She's like, well, Piper says that it's okay because Marcy quit the play. And and then Emmy was
actors
like,
will do that. They're pretty sensitive.
Well, the girls are particularly pretty yeah. sensitive too. But Emmy goes, no, no, she rejoined again. And Piper was like, no, no, Cammy is now Jane. And Emmy goes, oh, that's not going to work because Cammy is also in. She goes, every time Jane's on stage, there's a blackout and a music intro. And Cammy is both the lights and the music destructor. Right. That's what she said. She's the music destructor. And so I'm translating all of this into text thread and sending it to the aunt. So, like, we're all doing this sort of hearsay game of telephone where we will report to the children what's being said.
I feel like if Cammy was sick and couldn't, like, it sounds like Emmy could just run it. Like, she's got it all.
Well, I think it started out with just Emmy and Piper. Destructor. I believe Emmy and Piper were the original two that started out making flyers, and then it's sort of taken on a life of its own since then. As each cousin has contributed with their own strengths and giftings, it has become a little bit more elaborate with each passing week. And I'm not kidding.
It's greater than the sum of the parts.
They've
is what
had
you're saying.
Like that sign over there that says Peter Pan and the Coming of Jane Jr.
Jane Jr.
That's been up for weeks, like 6 weeks probably.
I just learned.
Yeah, they're researching, or they've been rehearsing for over a month and a half now.
Yeah, our garage has been taken over by this musical.
Yeah, every time Luke and I go to park in the garage, they ask us, can you please back out and put it in the driveway?
You parked on our stage.
Yeah, they have that whole area that they skate around. There's roller skates involved in this.
I know. I saw some of that.
Somehow.
A couple of weeks ago.
They've got a laptop, they've got a tablet that they connect to my Bluetooth speaker, and they've got like musical cues and things. And somehow there's a cabinet that usually has sports equipment in it. They've cleared all the sports equipment out, and that's where the smaller children hide when they're off stage.
That's the wings.
And they come out during a particular part. But I haven't actually seen any of it. I've just heard them discussing after the fact, don't forget to do this or don't forget to do that. And I had Silas come in today and give his line. He's Captain Hook. And I said, Silas, what is your line? Now I can't remember what it was.
Isn't it Blast That Peter Pan?
Yeah, I think that's right. Blast That Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's in his high-pitched, shrill voice.
Right.
And he wears that Peter Pan.
Right, because I asked him. I said, is that how you say it? You just say, blast that Peter Pan? Or do you say, blast that Peter Pan? And he went, blast that Peter Pan!
But he pointed when he said point. It.
Yeah.
So and he wears a red collared shirt that's his. That's his costume. The costumes are my favorite. So Emery is Peter Pan. She comes down in a green leotard with green leggings, and then she ties a little brown belt around it. Now, mind you, I have had nothing to do with the costuming.
Right, that's what you like about this play, is it's completely child led and child conceived, and they've done nothing.
Every time they find something inspiring, they co-opt it for their play. And so, they've got like Tinkerbell's costume, and Toodles is a lost boy, so he wears Emery's pants, which are about three sizes too big, and he wears Silas's shirt, but it's got to be inside out because they want it to be a black shirt. But Silas doesn't have any solid black shirts, so they took one that has designs on it, and they just turned it inside out. Yeah, so that sort of thing. And like every day, a new costume emerges, and they'll walk past in full regalia, and it just like the moms will be talking, and they'll just pause and kind of watch the creature or
this
whatever
thing
it is
walk past,
prance past, in like a bathrobe and baseball cap. And we'll
and
ask, like, who are you? What are you supposed to be? Oh, I'm a fairy or I'm a mermaid. And it's like, okay. And then they're like, bye.
Bye.
And they go out to the
back
garage.
Out to the garage.
Yep. So April 7th, our house. Tickets are $50.
Tickets are available online.
Tickets! Hey, Cammy.
Speaking of tickets.
Cammy, can you bring the ticket? Is Cammy in here?
Yeah, she handmade a million tickets.
Where are the tickets? Grandpa and Dad need to see your tickets. They haven't seen them. Yeah, they made tickets.
I didn't know that they actually made tickets.
Of course.
Of course they did. It makes sense now. But
every element is accounted for because they've been in several musicals now.
Do they thank their sponsors at the beginning?
Can they ask for sponsors? That would be fantastic. It would be fantastic if they went around and asked for sponsors.
Wait, wait. Explain what you mean by thank the sponsors at the beginning.
Every play I've been to begins with them thanking sponsors.
With the character. The main character does the character's voice and thanks the sponsors in character. So like Shrek or Anna from Frozen or like...
We'd like to thank First Farmers Bank,
right?
Something insurance company.
Welcome to welcome to Arendelle. You know, and this is try to stay warm during this production. So there's a whole bunch of like plays on words. And to answer your question, I overheard Cammy and Piper recording one of those the other day. Yes.
So yes.
Wow. So yes.
They are thanking their sponsors.
And if Cammy wasn't out in the garage right now, I would have her show you her tickets and play that recording for us. But she's out. She's outside.
We'll get that.
She's been out there for like 3 hours.
Yeah. She's out there.
They're taking this very seriously. They are putting a lot of work into it. A lot of effort.
Yep. I'm telling you, they thought of everything. They've been in enough plays now that like they've got the whole thing down. And so, yeah, it's like... What else? What else would make this cooler? And then they do it.
And then they do it.
So it's
so
nice.
So that's what's going on here as we prepare for Easter next week. Mm-hmm. Next week, we're not doing anything different in our service. But this week, we talked about how do we get into it?
I missed most of the
concept of... We were talking with some people after church. I was talking with some people after church and made the statement that if you can't articulate what you believe, then you don't really believe it. And there was, or you don't actually believe it because you don't know what you believe. And I got some pushback on that. As you might imagine, there's some people that have some pretty strong feelings.
It's
about
weird
that
the conversation at church would have taken that turn. I did not direct it that way, but I absolutely did rant at Luke, not about
on the way home.
No, it was days ago. That's why I say it's weird that this came up today because just a couple days ago, I was telling Luke about. Well, there were two things in particular that I said people constantly repeat, and it drives me crazy.
Mandy doesn't believe in the love languages, only spoken language and written language.
Right.
Basically.
Well,
me giving a hug does not communicate anything to Amanda.
No, I said it doesn't communicate the same thing as words do.
Uh-huh.
I said, specifically, there were two things that I mentioned that drive me crazy and I went on a rampage about. One, the idea a picture is worth 1,000 words. I said, that's ludicrous. And the second is a quote by St. Francis of Assisi, which apparently was actually quoted today.
It was actually quoted today, yes.
Multiple times.
In your conversation that I wasn't even a part of.
And that phrase is? Preach the gospel.
Preach the gospel at all times and when necessary, use words.
Yes, when necessary, use words.
Yeah. I didn't know the backstory of this monk, this recluse. Who came up with that Tabby was talking about. That's interesting to
me. Well, there's some question.
You kind of admire him, don't you?
I don't, actually.
as a guy who would like to not use
I understand
words.
Why he would say that now. He has a bit of a bias.
Well, there's some question about whether it was actually him, but it's usually him, gets attributed.
That was a framed thing in my house growing up.
Was it actually?
Yes.
Oh,
I didn't
know. Mm-hmm. So this is even more pertinent, more applicable than we thought.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, the premise is that what people are, how it's been used is that basically you don't have to talk. And in fact, the unspoken interpretation is that it's actually superior to not talk. You're better off not saying things, but practice what you preach often gets connected to this
concept.
That's
what I was going to say. It's often what you just said. It's your actions mean much more than your words.
Actions speak louder than words. Yes. It's another thing that gets attached to it.
And or so, they'll say that, I brought this up the other day too, that language, communication is like 90% body language or something. I'm going to get the stat wrong, but like there's some quote that supposedly sociologists have come up with, the stat, experts, this percentage, and it's like...
That was one study with not very many participants. Actually, I just read an article about how that it's been quoted so many times that it's become like truth, but it's pretty false.
Well, how could that possibly be the case? How could you possibly do the majority of your communicating
with body language?
Body language. Right. I noticed that
it wasn't
just
body language.
If you ever played charades, they 90% of communication they considered, is charades.
They considered like tonality as nonverbal or whatever. Like it was weird the way they separated things out.
The inflections on words don't count as words.
I'd have to go back and read it.
Yeah. Think of how many games there are built around like obscuring your speech or like covering your ears or whatever. Like, you know, that mouth game where you have to keep your mouth open, or Chubby Bunny when you shove marshmallows in your mouth. Or the headphone game where you're playing loud music and you have to read the people's lips. Right. How many times do we have to demonstrate that being able to speak and hear speech is
important to communication? Important.
Yeah. You can't just take that away and say what needs to be said with your body. You right. just that was my point to Luke when I was on the soapbox.
This just came to mind. A lot of people, including in our own family, often think that non-words speak louder. Like if you haven't talked to them in a while, that says something way louder than whatever the last thing you said.
Well, that's what happens when you're deprived of language, when you do not have words to judge or words to go on. Then you start reading between the lines, as the saying goes, and you do it wrong. There's way more potential for misunderstanding when you won't take the risk of speaking verbally. Then you end up, you find yourself interpreting silence or, you know,
or gestures or sign language.
Jumping to conclusions.
Or somebody with marshmallows stuffed in both cheeks.
I feel like within my own family, we all spoke it though. Like we had an understanding of we're not directly going to talk about anything. And so
was how we communicated.
There was a science of reading between the lines in the McKinney household. And it looked weird to outsiders, but understood.
Yeah, go ahead and explain.
What are you doing? What happened to you? I thought you were on the same team after church.
I'm just saying I had to unlearn all of that then now relate to everyone else in the world.
Well, I would push back on that. I don't think that your family was weird. I've never said that your family's way of not speaking
was strange,
was abnormal, or different from how most people
it's typical.
Do it. I would say that people who actually talk about their problems are weird, but we're also going to run into fewer problems in the long run because you're able to work out those issues. Because issues are inevitable. Mm-hmm. Conflict is inevitable. If you continually try to avoid it, you're only going to like make the problem worse.
Right.
Well, that's where we went in the conversation, was the idea that people will come up and they will say to me, and I think they say this to you too, Peach. They'll say, "Well, you know, you're good at communicating. You're good with words, and I'm just not good with words." And so that's sort of an excuse that people will make to not communicate, to not voice their views and their opinions and their beliefs. And the reason it came up at church was because the last couple of weeks there's been discussions about discipleship, and we were commanded in a sermon to make disciples. It's not a suggestion, it's a command you're supposed to do. But people start to push back on that by saying things like, "Well, you know, not everybody is good at communicating. Not everybody is good at speaking. Therefore, I'm absolved from having to do that."
We've talked about
this
before in relation to people hiding behind the whole spiritual gifts thing. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not my gift.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Well, and this is sort of, it's like that. People will excuse themselves from having to articulate their faith because they're not good at articulating things. And my premise, and I've thought this for a long time. This isn't just a recent thing I came up with. If you can't explain it to another person, then you can't explain it to yourself. And so if you can't explain it to yourself, then you don't believe it. You know, you may like the idea of what were you talking about? Prayer was your thing. You know, well, it's important to pray. And I really believe that prayer is important. But if you can't explain what it is that's important about prayer, and I'm not saying that you have to know all of the deep details about what happens when you talk to the Creator.
You have to at least know what prayer is. You have to know what's meant by the word prayer. You have to know what good means. You have to be like,
I like to pray with my behavior, my actions.
Okay, but people say you just have to make a joyful noise and the Holy Spirit will interpret. And so they really do go so far as to say, all you need to do is lay down, you know, prostrate on the floor, and then you'll be able to be counting that as prayer.
Every song is a Christian song if you're a Christian.
Right. That kind of thing. And well, so,
and there's no question that when it comes to expressing your faith, the Bible doesn't say go forth and proclaim the gospel and when necessary use words. The whole thing about the whole running down of words and the devaluing of verbal communication, that doesn't come from Scripture.
No, it comes from bad discipling. People in America are being discipled to believe that that is the correct way to think about things and the correct way to be a Christian.
Not just correct, but the superior way to do it.
That needs to be emphasized. Like, it helps if you look at a child, try to figure out what the default is, and pay attention to, like, how does a kid go from not knowing a thing to suddenly knowing it and believing it. And that's what I was explaining earlier when Tabby and Joe were talking about prayer. And, you know, I think I know people who really do believe that prayer is a good thing, but they can't articulate that. And I said, if they have said to you, I believe prayer is a good thing, then they actually do believe that. Because just like a child who says, I really like ice cream.
Right.
If they say, I really like ice cream, they have the experience necessary. They have eaten it. They've enjoyed it. They understand what like means. They understand what ice cream is. So on that level, for whatever it's worth, they do. You can believe them.
They can. They are explaining to you. They are using words to describe what they believe.
What they actually believe.
That ice cream is a good thing.
But if they look at you and they can't describe it, they don't even have the words, they're fumbling to, you know, and grasping to even say anything at all, that is a child who's still working out what they believe. And what I was going to say was, if you go to that very innocent, you know, as yet unlearned individual, that child, and you say to them, Christ wants you to show people that you love him, not necessarily say it with words. If you describe that to them and you give that to them to, you know, plant that seed in their mind, it's going to take root and it's going to have an effect on their future. And so I wonder.
Right, but you're using words to do that.
I get that. You have to. Every time anybody teaches.
You're using words.
If you're not using words to describe things to your kids, then you're giving that job to somebody else. Their tablets are doing it. The radio's doing it. The Sunday school teacher maybe, hopefully, is doing it. Their teacher at school is absolutely using words to indoctrinate them. Somebody's using words. So if you've decided that you're not going to give them God's words, then they're getting somebody else's words, but that's how learning happens. But what I think parents need to understand is, one way or another, you're going to be making disciples. So rather than like trying to command people or remind them, it is a command, you need to go and make disciples, it's inevitable. Your way of doing things, your style of existing, you know, is going to be passed on. And so there's nothing neutral, and you don't have the option of just being quiet and having that count as not teaching. In a way, you actually, in a way, that is a kind of a sermon, but it's a poor one, an easily misunderstood one. And it's the kind that, cuts out God's word and the fact that the Bible is written and that sermons are spoken and that like good communication is usually done with words.
Right.
So people have to just decide, do I want to give them accurate, you know, truth? Do I want to give people the gospel as it actually is? Or do I want to make excuses for why I'm giving them another gospel and I'm doing it poorly because I'm afraid to speak, you know?
They should be congruent. I mean, yeah. If you're telling someone you love them while you have them in a headlock, that's not congruent.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's context where
if
that's
your sons.
Right.
They love being put in headlocks.
And like when you are behaving like Christ, a lot of times that gives you such a great opportunity to use words, because oftentimes people will thank you, and that's a grand opening to then credit Jesus or deflect that and say why you're doing it. But we don't. We just say, oh, thanks. Or,
well, that was what I was saying to Tabby today, because it bears mentioning that if you do not tell somebody why you're motivated to do a thing, there's no reason for them to assume that you're doing it because you're a Christian. Mm-hmm. The atheists take great pride in being able to be good without God. There is no reason for anyone to assume that you are different from an atheist just because you're writing a check or helping an old lady across the street. Like, those are things the secular humanists take great personal pride in doing. And so I brought up today that during the time of Jesus, the thing that everybody was taking pride in was just a belief in God. It was just theism, because the Romans were polytheists and very tolerant of all of these various religions. And, you know, the Jews were monotheists, but everybody was able to live in harmony as long as we all were respectful towards each other's gods. It's very interesting that we're kind of in the similar place now, where the best thing you can be is not dedicated to your own God. The best thing you can be is willing to accept and work alongside other people's mm-hmm. God.
Right.
And that was the thing, that was the case back then. But in James wrote to the people, he's kind of given them a tongue lashing, the church. He said, you know, you believe that there's one God? Well, good for you. But it was sarcasm when he said it. Very good. Great. Wonderful. Bully.
You've got the faith of a demon.
Praise you for that. Yep. Yeah, demons even believe in God. And that's kind of what I think needs to be reiterated now, when the best thing you could possibly be is charitable and generous and not too preachy and not too, you know, not too churchy, but like be kind and tolerant to other people. It's like, okay, so you believe that a person should feed poor people. You believe that education is important.
Yeah, but not too churchy.
You believe that.
Don't do those things, but don't be churchy about it.
You believe that we should end trafficking and that, you know, children shouldn't be abused.
Yes, we should do that, but not in a churchy way.
Congratulations, Christians. Even the atheists believe that. So what sets you apart? Like, at the end of the day, what actually sets you apart? James is all about works mm-hmm. and how your faith will be demonstrated by your works. And what he says is, just because you're doing something good, even something that God commands, that doesn't mean that you're doing it for the right reasons. And the only thing that's going to differentiate you from somebody doing it for their own selfish glory and their own gain is if you tell them, hey, Jesus died for your sins, and that's why I'm doing this, and you should accept him as your savior too, because it's not going to go well for you if you don't. You know?
And it's okay if that's an uncomfortable thing to do. But I feel like people avoid it because they don't actually want to have those conversations, because they don't feel like they're equipped to actually.
Well, they may not be.
Are people who are not good with words to the way they understand it. And it's true. They're not good with words because they've never, because they're unpracticed, and because they've been letting themselves off the hook, doing the hard thing of communicating and actually articulating their beliefs, putting them out there for criticism and rebuttal and possible disagreement. And so they've been told, and they've internalized the idea that, well, if I just say nothing, that's the humble peacekeeping thing to do. If I say nothing, then there won't be any problems. You don't get into trouble by saying nothing.
There won't be any of that uncomfortable stuff that sometimes happens when people help me remember that I'm wrong sometimes.
Right.
Like, I won't ever be wrong if I'm never right.
And
I don't even try to be right.
Right. But how it manifests is that the people eventually, not all of them, but many of them, will then start to shush the other people around them, you know? And when you point it out to them, a lot of times they'll get offended because they're not good at words and they're not good with thinking. But they're like, well, I just don't say anything because That way I'm not going to get into trouble. And you should do that too. And it's like, wait a second. Do you realize what you just did?
They don't.
You just expressed a belief.
No, they don't realize it.
Right.
I know what I started saying before. I started out talking about what it's like to see a kid who doesn't have any verbal skills yet at all. And I was talking about that earlier today too, because at the daycare, it was explained to me that the children with the worst behavior issues will often be the ones who are the worst at expressing themselves. And so because they haven't, because they haven't had their parents or another adult help them take what's in their brain and communicate it in a healthy way, they just start throwing things or biting, or, you know, sometimes they'll pick up words, but they'll be swear words and, you know, angry words.
That's the way you let girls know that you like them when you're in grade school, is you just punch them or you throw a rock at them.
I can relate to this because I didn't, so Pearl, my car, does not have a horn because I took the fuse out because it was too sensitive and going off. And so I don't have a way to communicate when I'm driving, and I didn't think that would be a problem, but I'm finding that it is hard to communicate when you're driving.
Do you use the horn that often?
No, which is why I thought it'll be fine not having a horn. But there are times, like, there's no other way to communicate with other drivers without, like, you're just a madman trying to.
Okay, well, that's not strictly
true. You can't do it nonverbally very well. I could bump them. I could bump them, I guess.
Luke doesn't like to use his turn signal, so that explains why.
Oh, okay. Oh,
I know, but you look crazy flashing your lights.
Why does that look crazy?
You can send beep, 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 to your lights, and there's turn signals, and
yeah, I know. But sometimes you just need to communicate. Like a guy, I got.
You can also slow down, like at a four-way stop. You can actually slow down before you actually get to the intersection.
We're not. No, four-way stops are meant to be just felt out. That's you pull up,
Luke
you feel it
up
out.
To a four-way this stop is, at highway speed.
This is
slam
super
on the
interesting
brakes.
Though, because he's a great example of somebody who's not.
Thank you.
He's not stupid. He's not incapable of communication. It's just that nobody, like when he was being taught how to drive,
nobody forces him.
Nobody
to do it.
Taught him. You have to work with the other people on the road. It is not a closed course, and you have to defensively drive because the other people out there are prone to error. And he never even considers how closely he's following, whether he's freaking out other drivers by how fast he's approaching a stop sign.
Like, I remember the first time I learned that you can turn right on red.
Oh my gosh.
And my dad was with me, and I'm pulling up past Cone Palace to the red light, and I'm like, whoop. And he's like, what are you doing? I was like, you can turn right on red. And he's like, you have to look. I was like, oh, okay. I'll file that away.
It's still a red light. Oh, I thought if you were turned right, you just
you
disregard
can turn right
all
on red. Somebody told me that.
Oh, it's my gosh.
Turning right is carte blanche. You can break all of the other rules of the road if you're turning
saying,
right.
Sometimes, well, some people you have to baby step through
I'm proud of your dad, in all honesty, for saying point blank, no, son, that is incorrect.
Incorrect.
And here, you need to look first. Those were words that needed to be used
well,
in that situation.
A guy who identifies as a Christian posted this little story. There's an old tale where the rabbi was asked by one of his students, why did God create atheists? After a long pause, the rabbi finally responded with a soft but sincere voice. God created atheists, he said, to teach us the most important lesson of them all, the lesson of true compassion. You see, when an atheist performs an act of charity, visits someone who is sick, helps someone in need, and cares for the world, he's not doing so because of some religious teaching. He does not believe that God commanded him to perform this act. In fact, he does not believe in God at all. So his actions are based on his sense of morality. Look at the kindness he bestows on others simply because he feels it to be right. When someone reaches out to you for help, you should never say, I'll pray that God will help you. Instead, for that moment, you should become an atheist. Imagine there is no God who could help them and say, I will help you.
Mm-hmm.
That is what happens when you do good things.
That's what happens when you let
your testimony, and you don't have any words, and you just say, I'm just going to let my actions be my testimony.
You know who feels the need to post things like that? Atheists. Like they do want credit for that. They're not just doing it out of compassion.
Well, they
have religious convictions.
It's genuinely people who have no education. Like, it really is a lack of a skill set. It really is. It's not a gifting. It's not something that God just bestows randomly on people. It's a practiced and learned thing to read and then consider and then compare with truth and then come up with a conclusion that either I do or I do not agree with this or I agree with parts of it. And that whole process takes work. It takes education. If you were to read that story to my 13-year-old and 10-year-old, they would probably struggle with it. It would probably take a couple of days of, you know, consideration and unpacking to for them to figure out why something that's talking about God and seems to be saying that we should do good things, how can that be bad?
Right.
Like how it's shared by Christians, and lots of Christians in the comments seem to be kind of defending it. So what do I do with that? But when you realize that most of the people that you're sharing a pew with, you know, on a Sunday morning are functioning at that level. Most of them have not been educated past a 10-year-old/13-year-old level. Then you start to see what the problem is. And I don't have a problem with ignorance. I don't have a problem with somebody who's just never been taught. But if you've had the opportunity to learn and you just don't want to take it because, like Luke said, it makes you feel
dumb.
Yeah, it makes you feel silly. Or like you said, you don't want to have to deal with the conflict. And there's this fear of being, you know, wrong. Well,
people are going to call you a know-it-all. People are going to call you holier than
thou. Mandy said
something
profound earlier today, I thought, when she said people would rather be seen as stupid than arrogant.
Yeah.
And that has stuck with me.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been dealing with that for years now. It was probably 8 to 10 years ago when I first started having a conversation with the then youth minister's wife. And they no longer any kind of leadership at our church, but
they don't speak to you anymore either.
At the time she was saying, you know, well, my husband is more the egghead. That's what she liked to call him. He's brainy. He's nerdy. These are words she would describe to affectionately.
Right. And it's funny that nerdy and brainy and geek and bookworm and all of those are meant to be terms of, those are compliments?
No, they're...
Is that what that is?
They're meant to give this false sense of, like, we're so comfortable with our roles that, you know, we can even be a little bit insulting and it's fine. He knows I mean it with love. But the truth was that she did feel inadequate and she did feel like he was smarter. And rather than trying to learn, she gave up and decided, well, if he's going to be the smart one, I'm going to be something else. I'm going to be the compassionate one.
Right.
I'm going to be the intuitive one.
Right.
And intuition.
The problem is that those things are not mutually exclusive necessarily. You don't have to pick one or the other.
Well, the problem is intuition comes from sort of New Agey influence where they intentionally will refuse to read things, you know, and intentionally refuse to ask questions or speak about things.
Right. It's a Gnosticism.
Yes. They're so busy trying to transcend all of that.
I trust my empathy. I trust my compassion more than your book learning.
Right.
More than your icky clinical head knowledge.
Well, that's a Myers-Briggs thing. There's those who are intuitive and feel out situations, and then there's those who are like the judgy.
This particular lady was into Enneagram, but yes, same concept.
Which is sort of like a Myers-Briggs, but with more devil worship.
Right.
Well, yeah, because it's got more numbers in it.
Yeah.
Nobody likes math.
Enneagram is just... You know, if you take a like a standard sort of fun personality test and you give it over to Satan to do some editing, then you end up with the Enneagram.
Yes. I feel like we're a bit off track, but maybe not. Maybe not.
Speaking of which, that's how you should introduce yourself at this crystal conference thing you're going to. Like, hi, I'm John. I'm an Enneagram this and that.
They would not...
They wouldn't even bat an eye at it, would they?
No, they would 100% think he was serious. Unless
what I should do is come up with some different Enneagram
that they haven't heard of.
Right. That they're not even.
This is the expanded edition. I mean,
well, it's numbers, isn't it? Aren't you like a. The Enneagram is numbers, right?
Yeah, 1 through 9.
1 through 9. And I could be like an 11.
Yeah, and you can have like a wing number.
Well, right. It's 9 with a something wing.
Yeah.
But I think you have to be the wing of the number next to you. Like there's no 9 with a 4 wing or whatever.
Well,
like,
we'll see about that.
9 with
start
an 8
correcting
wing.
You.
Yeah. And so, I don't know.
I'm going to be a dragonfly. I'm going to have 4 wings. that I make up. Yeah, well, the point is that if you cannot articulate your faith, and this is what we talked about at church, you think in words. Yeah. And I was quickly corrected. Somebody said, well, I think in pictures. And I go, yes, that's true. But abstract thoughts, you need words. You know, loyalty. There's no picture for loyalty.
I know,
there's
but
no
I didn't. For,
you told me that like, words are concepts. They're
like
placeholders
you don't understand
for pictures.
You're talking to children. I feel like you're still trying to teach people to recognize what they as adults are capable of doing with their brains. And I don't think you realize that they really aren't doing what you're doing when they're thinking. When you're contemplating, first of all, you drive with the radio off for hours and you think.
Yes.
Literally nobody does that. Everybody in the United States wants to be distracted. They play music while they're, quote, studying. You cannot listen to music while you're studying. You can't do it if you're
I never
a
thought
good
you could,
studier.
But I just figured I was not as sharp as the
well,
people who could
let
multitask.
Me clarify. Let me.
I
let,
figured I was dumb.
Let me rephrase. There are
I have
people,
to turn the radio off.
There are people who
I'm
turn it on like white noise and it's classical music and they tune it out. They use music as a way to start tuning out the background noise of chatter in the library or whatever.
To focus.
That's not the same as these people cranking up the music the way like you do in the gym because they're... The reason you would listen to music in the gym, by the way, is trying to distract yourself from the pain and the burning in your muscles. But you can't distract yourself from the thought process. If you're studying, it needs to be the thing you're doing. Like, totally all in.
I agree with that. Because I've listened to, like, audiobooks at the gym, and it's way hard to focus on lifting while you're also trying to follow along
yes.
to an author.
Those are very different processes.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying to Dad is you can't have a conversation with somebody and be like, No, this is what the process is like. Trust, like, look at what you're doing here. This is what you're doing when you're thinking.
You know what I've decided to do? I'm just going to let my life testify. I'm not even going to, I'm going to quit using words because I'm not using them correctly.
No, well, you're using them correctly, but I don't think you realize how little people are capable of even understanding what you're
I'm
saying.
I'm getting there, but yet. I confessed that earlier. I said that my blind spot is always that I think everybody thinks like me. I right. think I could just say a thing and everyone will go, oh, well, yeah, of course. In fact, sometimes I don't say things because they seem so patently obvious that it's like it's germane
okay.
to bring them up.
Okay.
I think it comes down
or
to a value judgment. We value action more than we do words. We just do. We look at somebody doing something good, like feeding the homeless, and we put more value on that than the guy just yelling on the sidewalk, the gospel message.
The other day, yesterday, a couple nights ago, I was putting Emery down for bed. She had already been in her bed for like 20 minutes and had been partially asleep when I came up to say goodnight. So she's 8. And I basically woke her up to say goodnight. But I said, hey, in a couple of days, on Friday, this was Wednesday night, I said, on Friday, guess what? You still have school, but as sort of a consolation, Grandma is going to come and do school with you, and she's going to take you to the coffee shop to get some coffee beforehand. And Emery goes, when? And I said, Friday, which I had already said, but I repeated right. it. And she goes, and then go back to her house? And I said, no, then come back to our house, and we're going to do school here, and she'll help. And she goes, where's the coffee? I said, at her church, because they have a cafe at her church. So yep. I explain all this. And she goes, we'll work it out tomorrow. And I said, what does that mean? I started laughing.
What is there to work out?
And she goes, I'm still pretty lost about what's going to happen. And she said it just like that. And I'm dying laughing.
I'm still not sure.
She goes, why is that making you laugh so hard? And I said, because the fact that you, A, noticed that you were still struggling to connect the dots, B, asked me basically to take a rain check. We'll figure it out another time. And see, you could then explain to me why. Like, I'm not this is not clicking. I know what it feels like to understand what my mom is saying, and I know this isn't it. It's basically what she's doing. And here's the thing. I have come to discover, having had many very cute, higher level conversations with my 8 and 9 and 10 year old kids, lots of adults can't do that. Lots of adults were never taught how to do that. Nobody listened to them growing up. Nobody tried to interpret for them when they said things a little funny. Emery's the one who tried to explain to me that she sometimes has trouble going to bed at night because her body is fizzy like a soda can and it doesn't want to settle down. And I said, I know exactly what you mean.
She's also the one who knows about the music destructor.
She is farther along than I am.
All of our kids are.
Well, I was in a meeting a week ago and they were like, Luke, will you look into this thing? And I did not really know what they were. I was like, yes. And then I was like,
oh my gosh.
I decided I will figure it out later. I will,
absolutely.
I will read the minutes, figure out what I was assigned.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Right. And Luke and I together are like the worst combination because I'm talking to him and he's nodding along and I'm like, okay, he gets it.
Uh-huh.
Off we go.
What happened?
Neither one of us know what's going on.
Last week, I was annoyed with Luke, but not even fully because I've come to expect
this. I couldn't even
this.
Find the minutes. I had to have a phone call.
But you guys were on.
Better.
You were on that powwow with Brian and Juwan because you've been getting weekly meetings for comedy sessions.
Yep.
And Luke came upstairs. This was last Saturday.
What'd I do?
You know where this is going.
No, I don't.
Last Saturday, he logs
on. Oh, yeah.
He was on line with you guys and he says, I gotta go, I'm going to a birthday party.
And yeah, this is a perfect example of how Luke and I together are a disaster.
And then he logs off, he says, bye John, and John says, see you tomorrow, and Luke goes, I'm going to a birthday party, and Dad says, okay, see you tomorrow. And then Luke hangs up and he comes upstairs and he goes, your dad didn't act like he remembers it's Marcy's birthday party. And I said,
it's Marcy's birthday party. I'm supposed to be
he
there.
He probably doesn't remember. And I said, did you say anything? And he goes, no, he just said, see you tomorrow.
And I did say something. I said, I'm going to a birthday party. That should have been the clue.
You don't have to clue people. There are these words where you can say, hey, it's Marcy's
your granddaughter's birthday party.
I'm remember? Like John. I assume I'm talking to intelligent,
right.
Well-organized people.
Right. And that's what I'm saying.
That's my problem.
The problem with communication is that people make assumptions. They don't use their words. We've been given this gift. And it's not just a gift that you can choose to give people. It's actually essential. And Andy Wilson says stories, which you use words to tell, are soul food. It means literally nourishment for an important part of the human experience. Being able to communicate with another person is essential for healthy relationships. It's just the way that God made the universe.
Right. Well, and you go insane. You gradually go insane if you're not able to be understood by people.
Right.
And so if you're telling yourself or allowing yourself to be told, if you're believing that verbal communication, that communicating with words is an option, and it's a thing that you can just, you know, I'm just not very good at it, so I'm gonna choose to be more empathetic or compassionate. I'm gonna be a person who does things instead of says things.
Right.
Then you're gradually going to go crazy because we're not meant to function that way, and it's not mutually exclusive. You don't have the option to go, well, you know what? I'm more of a doer. I'm more of a thinker than a communicator. So I'm not good with words. I'm not comfortable with it. I'm going to leave that to somebody else. It's not an option. You have to do it.
Yep. Yep. You're going to stunt your kids. You're going to make it difficult for them to function. Someday they'll leave their father-in-law hanging instead of just saying, hey, you're supposed
it's
to be
my
there
birthday.
Too. You need to be there.
Dummy.
Thanks for visiting the Comedian's House. If you want to spend more time with our family, you can follow John Branion on YouTube and Facebook. Also email nextdoor@johnbranion.com with your comments and questions. We'll see you next time.